AusYA with Sarah Mair Cox and Jean Wong.
I'm Rhianna Patrick. This is ABC Radio and AusYA with Anika Clare from Tea in the Treetops, who's filling in for Jean Wong, who is away on her honeymoon at the moment, and academic Sarah Mair Cox are in to talk all things Australian young adult fiction. And we're going to take a look at the two releases that we're talking about tonight. The first is Beautiful Mess from Claire Christian, and I'm going to let Claire explain what Beautiful Mess is all about.
It's a dual narrative about a 17-year-old boy named Gideon and a 15-year-old girl named Ava, and they are both navigating some of life's biggest, most messiest stuff. They meet each other in the book when they both start working at Magic Kebab, and the book begins kind of 6 months after Ava has lost her best friend to her own battle with depression, and Gideon has his own kind of series of mental health woes, and they meet and they become friends.
Author Claire Christian talking about her debut novel, Beautiful Mess. Sarah, what did you make of Gideon and Ava?
I think they're both absolutely fabulous characters. And I think, once again, we've picked two books that have themes that are similar themes running through the same ones but dealt with completely different. So tonight we're looking at anxiety. And Ava, as Claire said, her best friend Kelly has committed suicide, and she's fallen into this really destructive relationship with Kelly's brother, Lincoln, and who is also grieving her sister's death. And they know that they're really only together because of their grief, but they just can't break out of being together. And then this boy called Gideon starts working at the Magic Kebab shop where Ava works, and he is just so different to anything that Ava's ever met before. And so this really beautiful friendship starts developing, and they've both got secrets, and bit by bit they start to let their guard down and they learn that they've got a lot in common. And I think it is the most, the friendship aspect of it is the most honest treatment of a young adult friendship I've ever seen done in a book before. It's really beautifully sort of unraveled for us.
Sarah, I wanted to work at the Magic Kebab. I really enjoyed the Magic Kebab in this book, and I really enjoyed watching Ava and Gideon's friendship, and I love the fact that it starts out with them writing letters to each other and that whole conversation that Ava has where she's like, I don't even know, like, where do I get a stamp from? Do you, like, what is a post office? It was absolutely hilarious. Nika, what did you make of A Beautiful Mess? Were you two, you know, also into that relationship that we see in this book and the friendship that forms between Ava and Gideon?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was a really an almost pure relationship that they had. They just, you know, gravitated together and they were just really good together. And I also thought that Gideon's family were really awesome. He had positive family dynamics. His two mums were obviously really in love, and it was just a really nice thing to have in a YA book. We don't always get that positive family thing going on.
And it was interesting too, isn't it, Sarah? You know, when we look at Gideon, I mean, he is slightly awkward, but you really, like, you're going for the underdog here. You're hoping he, you know, has these conversations that he has with Ava and hopes that he can overcome his shyness but also overcome his kind of social awkwardness.
Yeah, and we really see him develop and bloom as the book goes on. And of course, what we discover is that he is a slam poet, and I have great admiration for people that can write and perform slam, you know, take part in slam poetry. And it's very clever the way Claire Christian has created this completely separate voice for Gideon. It doesn't always work in a book where when an author tries to write as if they are that character, but she does Gideon's writing so well. And when we have glimpses of the poetry that he writes and then the way he performs it, you just see another whole side to Gideon that, of course, Ava sees as well and then starts to become very attracted to. But, yeah, it's really beautifully done. And I think boys would really enjoy this book as much as girls will.
I'm Rhianna Patrick. This is ABC Radio and the Ozwaye panel of Annie Clare from a podcaster, book blogger. She's from Tea in the Treetops, and academic Sarah Mair Cox are taking a look at Beautiful Mess by Claire Christian. And I mean, on that, Annie, what did you make of, I mean, there's some very full on themes in this book as well. And it definitely, you know, should have said trigger warning. If you do suffer from anything that is anxiety related, self-harm, depression. And you know, there is at one point where Ava, you know, she's really dealing with her anger at her best friend not wanting to stick around.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, because no one really knew that her friend was going to commit suicide, like there was no, like she'd been a bit down or whatever, but no one really thought that it was to that extent. So, I mean, it reinforces a message. You can't really fix somebody who's depressed or anxious. All you can do is really be there for them and encourage them to you know, seek help if they need it. And I thought the book did deal with it, like examined the positive ways to deal with it, like counselling, medication, some strategies. And I wish I'd had a book like this when I was younger to learn about this sort of thing, because it really taught me a lot about what all that anxiety is all about.
And if any of these topics that we're talking about tonight, particularly in Beautiful Mess or in Crystal Sutherland's semi-definitive list of worst nightmares, you know, is something that you think about or that you may need help with, Kids Helpline is 1800 55 1800. That's 1800 55 1800, or Lifeline on 13 11 14 if you do need to talk to someone. Well, as we have found out a little bit about Beautiful Mess from Claire Christian, let's find out what Claire's been reading lately.
Not enough, actually. My to-be-read pile is enormous. The last like book that I read and I really loved was Lindy West's Shrill. And then I've been reading Hunger by Roxane Gay, which is just too traumatic. So I kind of put it down and need to have some feeling and some ice cream and kind of process before I pick it up again. I loved Mark Smith's Road to Winter, which was great. So I'm looking forward to reading the sequel to that. Yeah, what else? Not enough is my answer to that question.
That's Claire Christian, the author of Beautiful Mess. And if you do want to hear more about Beautiful Mess from Claire, you can find that full interview up at abc.net.au/abcre, which is just A-B-C-R-H-I. Or why not subscribe to the podcast, because then you'll be alerted as soon as everything that we do here on ABC Re gets uploaded and sent out into the world. I'm Rhianna Patrick, and with me tonight is Anika Clare, who is a book blogger and podcaster based in Brisbane with Tea in the Treetops, and filling in for Jean Wong tonight. And also with me, academic Sarah Mair Cox. And we're taking a look at two of the latest Australian young adult fiction releases. The first was Beautiful Mess from Claire Christian, and the second is a semi-definitive list of worst nightmares by Crystal Sutherland from Penguin Random House. And to find out more about this list of worst nightmares, I'm going to let Crystal explain what the book is all about.
I have been reading a lot of kind of folklore fantasy, actually. So I read a fantastic book by Catherine Arden called The Bear and the Nightingale, which is kind of a retelling of the Jack Frost myth, but it's set in Russia. And there are lots of household kind of demons that one character can see. And it's just a beautiful folklore mystery. And I highly recommend it.
That was Crystal Sutherland telling us what she's been reading lately. We will come back to what the semi-definitive list of worst nightmares is all about. We will be talking about that very, very soon.
It's Rhianna.
Rhianna Patrick on ABC Radio.
So let's find out from Crystal Sutherland what a semi-definitive list of worst nightmares is all about.
So it is about a girl called Esther who believes her family is cursed by death, to each suffer one great fear in their lifetime. Her father is agoraphobic and hasn't left the basement in 6 years. Her brother is terrified of the dark. And her mother is afraid of bad luck. And your fear is the thing that will also eventually kill you. So Esther doesn't want to know what her great fear is. She keeps a list of 50 things that could potentially become her great fear and avoids them at all costs. That is until she runs into an old friend from primary school and he sets a challenge for them. They go out every week for a year and face one of her fears together to try and break the curse.
That's author Crystal Sutherland on a semi-definitive list of worst nightmares and what it's all about. Anika, what did you make of the twins Esther and Eugene who we meet in this story?
Yeah, they're really, okay, it's really hard to describe this book because it's so different. Like, I don't usually read a lot of contemporary YA. I'm usually more of a fantasy kind of reader, but when I do read it, this is what I like it to be like. So quirky, weird, possibly magical, you're not really sure, a bit folky. So Essa is like, she's such an eccentric person. She just wears cosplay like every day because she wants to hide behind the clothes that she's wearing rather than having everyone look at her because her family is so strange. And she's basically got these massive confidence issues. And her brother Eugene is afraid of the dark, of the things that are in the dark. So he basically has to just live in the light all the time. And it just makes for a really strange premise, like an interesting story right off the bat.
Sarah, what did you make of the two twins that we meet in a semi-definitive list of worst nightmares?
They're gorgeous. It's reading about the Solar family. Look, anyone who's got a surname of S-O-L-A-R, and I'm sorry to the people out there who have that as their surname, but it's an unusual name. And I just kept thinking this was like a cross between the Addams Family meets Little Miss Sunshine. The twins are gorgeous. Anyone with a name like Eugene has got to just be a killer. And they're just so strange and wonderfully unusual and weird and, it's such clever writing. I really, whimsical is a great word to describe it, and weird and fantastical and, yeah, just I think so many people will enjoy this book. I actually think it would be a fantastic book to put on a school book list because you'd have a whole lot of students enjoying reading their book list.
Yes.
Yeah, Anika's, yep, she's right there with you. On the writing, Sarah, you mentioned the humour that is in this. I found myself laughing out loud a number of times while reading this because I just loved Esther's outer monologue, her inner monologue, and every other monologue that's going on with her. And I just kind of loved her way of thinking and her quirkiness. I really enjoyed these two characters and just everything that's going on with the phobias that pretty much like all of their family has.
Yeah, and I think it's such, and I'm really glad we're doing these two books together because what we discover is that this is a family gripped intergenerationally by anxiety. And, you know, anxiety is as crippling a mental illness as depression. And often people don't realise how anxious they are and that anxiety leads to depression, as we learn with one of the characters in the book. And I think the way that Crystal Sutherland has sort of not made light of anxiety, but treated it as it made it strange in a way that you can objectively look at it and say, look, why would you have a list of 50 things that are the things that possibly you could be so scared of that one of them will kill you? And then, of course, the funniest thing I found about the list was that there's nothing in first place, because that's supposed to be her greatest fear. And then if nothing's in first place, then that can't come and kill her. So there's just all this really wacky sense of misplaced logic throughout the book, which is exactly what anxiety does. It trips you up and it makes your brain sabotage yourself so you can't think clearly at all. But it's done in such a sort of, well, as I said, it's not lighthearted at all, but it's done in a way, it's quite sort of folk-tale-y, and I like that your description, Annie, that it's very sort of folky, because it slips through a whole lot of things under your nose, and then it's not till you're looking back over it and you think, wow, that was a lot of really scary stuff that I was dealing with, or that the characters were dealing with, and I just was laughing my way through it.
Annie, do you, you know, you mentioned there that it a little bit too contemporary for what you would normally read, but is there also, do you think, an element of magic realism in this novel?
Yes, you're never really sure if it is magic. Like, it's a bit sort of, you know, you're not sure if Essa's just saying that her mum is a bit magical, that she, you know, everyone thinks she's a witch, and that the trees grew overnight. It's like, did that really happen, or did she just sort of make that up? So that was, you're not really sure. I mean, I don't want to give anything away. By the time you get to the end, you have a better idea of what's actually going on. But, yeah, I just love the unknown side of it, like just a bit mystical. It was a bit strange.
but even when you do get to the end of it, I was rereading the end of it again this afternoon, and I think one of the most interesting characters throughout the whole book is Death, and yeah. Reginald Soler, who is Esther and Eugene's grandfather, who has started this curse in the Soler family that you're all going to die of your greatest fear. He has supposedly met Death, I think it was 6 times in his life or something, and the first time was when he was fighting in Vietnam. And you never, you sort of know that Death is not real, but you sort of never quite sure whether he is or not. Is he really Death, or
I felt that too, Sarah. Did you find that, and I ask you this as well, Annie, about Esther's best mate, Hef. I felt that I wasn't even sure, is Hef real? Is Hef not real? Is Hef an imaginary friend?
Yeah, I agree. I had to go back and read that chapter or those few pages 2 or 3 times, because when she talks about this apparition and she says, Hef, you've got to stop doing that. And I thought, well, she's just clearly a, you know, mute poltergeist who haunts Esther, and why would that be strange? Because that none of them go to the top floor of their house, because Rosemary, the mother, thinks that the top of the house is haunted anyway, and it's blocked with all this furniture, so you can't get up the stairs. So it just didn't seem weird. But then you sort of think, you start reading into it, and Hef is signing all this stuff, and you think, really? Is a ghost going to sign throughout this whole book? And then I went back and read and went, no, she's a real person.
Yeah, then you meet her parents. And you're like, oh, she's real.
She is real, yeah, and her parents are documentary filmmakers. So, it's just, I think this book is, it's so visual in the way things are described. And Jonah Smallwood, the love of Esther's life from primary school, who reappears, mugs her, sort of mugs her, pickpockets her.
Yeah, takes some of her stuff without asking.
That's right, after he's supposedly been mugged. And then he magics his way into her locker over a series of days. So there are all these things that you can sort of explain what's going on, but then part of you goes, really? Maybe everyone is just a little bit magic. It's a very magical book in a sort of really beautiful, lighthearted way.
This is ABC Radio. I'm Rhianna Patrick, and academic Sarah Mair Cox and book blogger Anika Clare are with me for OzYA as we talk about a semi-definitive list of worst nightmares by Crystal Sutherland out through Penguin Random House. Anika, what did you make of, with this book, and you mentioned how much you loved Esther's cosplay, did that just make you want to kind of, you know, break the norm and just feel free to wear whatever you wanted?
Oh, absolutely. I've always wanted to just wear like a stormtrooper outfit to work. I mean, how cool would that be? And she just comes up with some really weird and wonderful stuff, like an airline hostess outfit, and she just wears it in the middle of a field to go and watch a thunderstorm. You know, like it's just, And she's doing it in order to hide from people because they're all going to look at the costume instead of her, which I think is a really backwards way of trying to hide in plain sight. So I've always wanted to do cosplay, but I've never found anyone to do it with me, so...
Well, maybe you could just be Esther Sola and do it by yourself.
I know.
Don't need anyone else. Annie, you know, I also read Crystal's debut, Alchemical Hearts, and they're very different books between this and Semi-Definitive. But I, you know, I think I love the twins more because the cover is absolutely beautiful. It's this beautiful purple. I didn't realise until about 2 days ago that that is actually a skeleton's arm holding a flower across the front of the cover because I was too busy looking at the cat at the bottom of the cover who reminds me of Salem, the cat it's just left my head, the teen witch. TV program. No, there was another one. It'll come to me. I can't believe I just lost my train of thought. Sabrina.
Oh,
the teenage witch. Thank you. But I was too busy looking at that to realise it. But, you know, did you end up getting a chance to read Alchemical Hearts?
No, I didn't. And I wanted to, but no, I didn't get a chance to.
Sarah, where would you put a semi-definitive list of worst nightmares in terms of books? What is a great accompanying book with it, do you think, that fits into that same kind of reading experience?
Oh, look, there was a book a few years ago and I'm not going to read it. It was a story about this girl who lived on the edge of a forest. It was a debut novel. Young adult Australian. It was an unusual author. I'm going to go completely blank. Isn't it terrible? And she saw all these awful things in the forest. help me out here.
Anika is looking puzzled.
Oh, I don't know. The author was Elise someone. Oh, Elise Neer? No, I'll have to look it up and do some homework and get back to you. I'll tweet it out. But that was very much sort of magic realism because it definitely has got this sort of magic feel to it. The only thing I didn't like about the book, but I realised I had a big rant to you both before the program about how I can't stand Americanized terms. And then, of course, I get halfway through the book and I realise... Well, the book is actually set in America, but which is why all the terms are Americanized. But I don't know why it had to be set in America, except, I mean, I do know why it had to be, because obviously the publishers are aiming for an American market. But
well,
it just makes me angry that...
If you listen to the full interview, Sarah, that might answer your question, because I do ask Crystal, because obviously Alchemical Hearts, her first book was also based in America, and this story is also based in America again. And you can find that full interview at abc.net.au/abcre, where Crystal answers that question for you, Sarah.
Oh, good
so,
stuff.
Yes.
Okay.
So if you, right. And well. I did, there. I have, she has actually answered a question that I had, which is will she look at writing a novel that has an Australian story, possibly? She also answers that. So if you do want to know more, because I was very intrigued by that both books are set in America and found that quite fascinating. So, yes, she does answer that for you, Sarah.
Yeah, because I think it'd be really good for Australians to claim that magical realism spot because I think a lot of people think that that's something that can only be written by overseas writers, and it's not true at all. Someone like Kate Constable's done a wonderful job of it in her book and she's used Indigenous motifs as part of her story. So it definitely can be done, but I look forward to listening to that interview.
Well, Sarah and Annie, thank you so much for joining me for OzYA. We do have another two of the latest Australian young adult fiction releases that we'll be talking about next month. Annie, thank you so much for filling in for Jean.
Thank you for having me.
And if you want to find Annie, you can find her at Tea in the Treetops, and you can also have a look, listen to your podcast. Yeah, Annie?
Yeah.
Yep. And Sarah, we'll do this again next month.
Sounds great.